And with me here is Steve Caramile. Steve is our recently appointed Inland Fish Program Manager. Steve has his Master of Science in Fish Ecology and has been with the agency for 24 years and a variety of different positions throughout the agency, and most recently our Warm Water Program Manager. So it's great to be here this morning and talk with you about this. What we are talking about is implementation of the legislation that the state legislature just passed this last session to implement House Bill 1579. We also will talk with you a bit about some other game fish rules that we're proposing to change. These we're characterizing as housekeeping rules. And to do this, we'll talk a bit about the timeline and public involvement that we've used to date. Again, talk about what the second substitute House Bill 1579 says and directs the agency to do. Again, we'll cover some housekeeping rules around some freshwater game fish regulations. Touch on public comment that we'd received through October 4th. And then have an opportunity at the end for public testimony today. So by way of timeline, the department filed a proposed rulemaking with the code reviser, CR 101, back in June. And staff drafted the proposal that we filed in September. And then during the September to yesterday or day before yesterday, we completed public meetings around the state. You'll see in Mill Creek, Olympia, Ridgefield, Ephrata, Spokane, as well as provided opportunity for the public to comment online with an online commenting tool. Today we're here to provide you the initial briefing and to conduct the public hearing. Between now and December 13-14 commission meeting, staff will be looking at all of the public comment that we received through today, and then we'll be coming back to the commission in December with recommendations for action. Upon decision-making by the commission in December, any regulation changes would then take effect 31 days after the adoption of those or the filing of those rules with the code reviser's office. So the second substitute House Bill 1579 language, the preamble says that's an act relating to implementing recommendations of the Southern Resident Killer Whale Task Force relating to increasing Chinook abundance. And this was one of the recommendations that the task force did have this past year and forward to the legislature. During that legislative session, the outcome was specific language that was adopted into Chapter 7708. And specifically, it states that the commission shall adopt rules to liberalize bag limits for bass, walleye, and channel catfish in all anadromous waters of the state in order to reduce the predation risk to salmon smolts. And so a bit of background, the commission has addressed this topic before. In 2013, during rulemaking, the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission adopted regulations for river streams and beaver ponds in that portion of the Columbia River Basin from the Oregon-Washington border upstream. And that regulation eliminated the daily limit and size limit for these three species. Then in 2016, both the Washington Commission as well as the Oregon Commission adopted similar regulations from the Oregon-Washington border downstream to the mouth of the Columbia, again focusing on the major the Columbia River, Snake River, and major migratory waterways. And then in 2018, through the sport rule simplification process, These rules eliminating daily limits and size limits for these three species was expanded to include all tributaries in the basin. So currently this regulation is in place throughout the Columbia Basin in rivers, streams, and beaver ponds. However, it did not address, or we have not addressed those areas that contain anadromous fish in lakes, ponds, and reservoirs, as well as in the western portion of the state. And so that's the piece that is being proposed to be addressed during this rule cycle, specifically to address the legislative legislation that was passed this last session. So what we ask staff to do is look at the landscape, particularly in the Columbia Basin relative to lakes, ponds, and reservoirs, and to identify those waters where we had walleye, bass, and catfish overlapping with salmon, smolts. And then secondly, to look at the rest of the state, Puget Sound and coast, look at those rules for river streams and beaver ponds, as well as an assessment, again, of lakes where we have that overlap in these species. And what you have in your notebook is a table that specifies these 146 lakes, ponds, and reservoirs. And that package is what went out to the public for comment. The breakout of those there's the majority of those lakes occur in Puget Sound, 108, 14 in the coastal region, 12 in southwest Washington, and 12 in eastern Washington. And so we have a map here. It's the purple shaded area represents the lakes, ponds, and reservoirs in the state that are aligned with the 146 lakes that are in your notebook material there. So what I'd like to do then is pass this to Steve to talk through the housekeeping rules, and then we could summarize a bit about what we've heard from the public, and then open it up for questions.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners, director, deputy director. So I'm going to walk you guys through actually rather quickly. We have 10 game fish housekeeping proposals. These are all pretty much clean up from last year's rule simplification process. So the first proposal here is to apply our beaver ponds rule statewide. We currently have a beaver ponds rule that's used mostly here in western Washington. I think currently it's all in Puget Sound. And what that does is it extends our trout and game fish rules in streams to beaver ponds that are either located within the stream or alongside the stream. And this was intended to be used as a statewide rule back during the rule simplification process. It was just overlooked. So the intention here is to make this a statewide rule. The second proposal here is to include kokanee in the statewide trout bait rule. Prior to rule simplification, this probably would have been known as the statewide trout and kokanee bait rule. Kokanee used to be part of this, but with rule simplification, we split the two species and have separate rules for each of them. So this will be bringing kokanee back into the statewide trout and bait rule, which is when fishing with bait, all trout equal to or greater than the minimum size are counted as part of the daily limit, whether you harvest the fish or not. The third proposal is to remove the daily limit of lake trout and Lake Chelan. Once again, prior to rule simplification, lake trout were managed with no minimum size, no daily limit in Lake Chelan. But with rule simplification, we moved to a standard five fish daily limit. Staff's believe that lake trout and lake chelan is more appropriately managed with no minimum size, no daily limit. Okay, the fourth proposal, there's actually two proposals here for Lake Rufus Woods. The first one's a licensing reciprocity with the Colville Confederated Tribes, and that's basically stating that a non-member fishing permit or a Colville Tribal Member ID will suffice for our licensing requirements on the water at Lake Rufus Woods or on the North Shore. And the second one for Lake Rufus Woods is going to be a change to the trout rule. Once again, prior to rule simplification, it was no minimum size, two fish bag limit, and that was consistent with what the Colvilles use on their reservation. But with rule simplification, we added a 14-inch minimum. They did not. So the proposal here is to roll back to consistent rules with the Colvilles. The fifth proposal, removing the eastern brook trout daily limit from Patterson Lake in Okanagan County. Patterson Lake in Okanagan County used to be managed with stocked brook trout. We haven't stocked brook trout in there in a couple of years, and we don't plan on stocking them again. There's currently a special rule that says brook trout need to be counted as part of your daily trout limit. This rule change would basically make that a statewide minimum size daily limits, which is no minimum size, no daily limits. So bring it to the statewide rules. The sixth proposal is to remove the rainbow and cutthroat size restrictions from Black Lake. And again, during rule simplification, a 14-inch minimum was added in error. So this proposal will just revert back to the statewide rules, statewide minimum size, minimum daily limits. And here at the end, we've got three technical changes. The first one for Yakima River whitefish, it's basically to strike those four words, open for whitefish only, from the Yakima River Canyon. During the whitefish season, December 1st to the last day of February, it is actually open for other game fish as well as catch and release rainbow trout, so it's a source of confusion in the pamphlet. So it's just, once again, striking those four words from the pamphlet in the WAC. The second, the Titan River, North Fork Titan River, this is adding back sections of the river that were inadvertently removed during rule simplification, and specifically the mouth of the North Fork Titan to Forest Road 740. That's always been, I'm trying to think what current regulation we have had on there. That was a special gear. But anyways, that was inadvertently removed during rule simplification, so this is just adding that back to WAC. And then the last one, landlocked salmon rules in locations with adipose clipped trout. So areas that have landlocked salmon, those rules are basically revert to your trout rules. For they can be counted as part of your trout daily bag limit. Here at Lake Roosevelt in the Sandpoyle River, we have a marked selective fishery for rainbow trout. The landlocked salmon are not marked. So this rule proposal would allow landlocked salmon, unmarked landlocked salmon, to be counted as part of your trout daily or your salmon daily limit, trout daily limit.
Thank you, Steve. So in terms of public comment that we've received to date on all of these regulations, what I say to date through October 4th, we received around 130 regulations through then. As you might imagine, towards the end of the comment period through the 17th, we received quite a number of more comments that we have not been able to get through completely. But in general, the comments that we've received have been focused around implementation of the House Bill 1579. And as you might imagine, we have polar comments. We have some comments where we have some support relative to the conservation objectives associated with increased survival of salmon smolts. We've also had comments that they support this rulemaking process. The other comments that we receive in opposition to this are varied, and I would say are concerned about this rulemaking and the impacts that it could have on recreational fishing for bass, in particular bass and walleye, but catfish as well. And there's questions that have been raised regarding this relationship with Chinook salmon recovery as opposed to all salmon, and some of the questions around, well, why is the department proposing to address all salmon areas as opposed to just Chinook? And that comes into play with the legislation that was passed. The preamble talks about the intent to protect Chinook salmon. The statute language that was adopted references all salmon, and so there's a bit of a there's some variability in those two pieces that I think the commission will need to work through. There's also concerns around the science of this topic, and while we do have good information that indicates these species do consume out-migrating juveniles, there's less information to quantify savings in particular areas or particular times associated with this effort. We do know that there's been analysis done when you look at places like the John Day Reservoir on the Columbia River, where you have a 140 or so mile river system. The recreational fishing effort is likely not significant to have a population level effect in that reservoir. Having said that, though, there is an ability for site-specific or locations, for example, the mouth of the John Day Reservoir could see some effects associated with this rule. So there could be location-specific changes in abundance of these populations through these regulations. There also is concern around the economics and what impacts this will have on local communities. And staff or understand that. We were working hard to try to identify those waters where we thought this met the intent of the legislation and not to overreach and implement this more broadly than what the legislative intent was. And so part of what we'll be looking at in the public comment is to determine if that we got the list of waters right, and if there are waters that should have been added and were not, or waters that were added and should not have been. We want to look at that information and try to understand that as we work a recommendation to bring back to the commission in December. And so we did hear comments about other items that the agency should try to address salmon predation and reducing that. We support a broad range of efforts to reduce predation on salmon. Our challenge at this time is we need to bring a proposal to you that implements the statute that the legislature provided us. And so that's what this focuses on. And so that's what we know now of comments that we received through the 4th of October. We did not receive any comments on any of the housekeeping rules. And with that, we would open this up for any questions that the commission might have.
Craig, just quickly, because we do have a bunch of people here that we want to hear from. But I'm confused, because earlier today we heard from two people on this issue, and they were talking about, they were unhappy because lakes had been closed. I'm looking at the bill, and it's talking about liberalizing bag limits, so, I mean, I'm just basically confused and wondering if there's a connection or if I heard wrong.
Thank you, Commissioner Baker. The comments that I've reviewed, people are expressing concern that the liberalization of these daily limits and size limits will result in a reduction in these species in those waters, impacting the quality of fishery that they have there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we got two commissioners that want to, Commissioner Anderson and Commissioner Thorburn. If there's no objection after that, we have a number of public comment, and then we can follow up with additional questions.
Okay. Just one quick question with regard to the definition of salmon areas. Has there been an outreach to the legislature to determine whether or not they meant Chinook salmon or all salmon, or just what? Where is that at?
Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. Yes. Prior to drafting the proposal, staff reached out to the prime sponsors of the legislation and asked for some clarification. The comment that we received back left some room for the commission to determine what the appropriate course of action was. The general response, and I'll paraphrase, is that the intent was to do the best that we could for the juvenile salmon survival, but also to think about that in the context of if there was information that the legislature didn't know at the time, that we should be considering that as well.
Commissioner Thorburn.
Well, my question, I'm going to repeat a question that I brought up in the Fish Committee, because not all of the commissioners have heard your response. And that is, well, first of all, to start off, that I'm concerned we're taking kind of a blunt instrument to deal with a problem that we're not sure how effective, you know, dealing with it is going to be. It's a fishery that has a lot of support and passion around it. My question was, and what's really important are these large fish. There's contest fishing, there's a kind of a trophy aspect to it. So why do we need to do both bag limits and size limits? Could we perhaps preserve some of the larger fish?
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. I believe that's within the purview of the commission. I believe there is flexibility there. The staff proposal that's before you is consistent with the actions that the commission has taken in 2013, 16, and 18. So we built this proposal based on action that's been taken previously. The new component to this is those lakes, ponds, and reservoirs that were not addressed previously. And so I think there's some discussion around the lakes, particularly in Western Washington, I think, Is this the right rule for those waters? Do we have the right waters listed, is there flexibility around that? I would anticipate that as we review the public comment, that staff could bring options to the commission for consideration in December that could address a broader spectrum of proposals.
Okay, we're going to move into the public comment section right now. I'm going to call you folks up three at a time. Those of you that haven't been here, it's a three-minute rule. Please, when you hear the Nikki over here make noise for you, that means you can wrap up your next sentence. So if I could call up Phil Martin, Mark Wallace, and Randy Thompson, please. Mr. Martin.
Hello. That'd be me. Thank you. I'm Mount St. Helens Bassmasters president. We were founded in 94. I commend you on your thing. I think we're taking a blunt instrument here and smashing a fishery that we all are passionate about and spend a lot of money in the state. Our particular club, through the years, we've spent about $1.6 million on our equipment, the fishery, hotels, travel. We have other fishing clubs and a total of about $25 million spent. And with what they're trying to do here, that's going to destroy that. There's other things. Annual fishing, about $45 billion is spent in the fishing community through the United States. Roughly $16 billion is counted for bass fishing only, which is about 64%. So if you take those numbers, that's a pretty significant amount of money, and through the state of Washington as well. In 2001, freshwater fishing expenditures generated more than $19.4 billion in wages. That's up 23% since 91. So it's a growing industry, and again, we're just taking a hammer and smashing that in Washington state. Fishing ranks as the fourth most popular participation sport in the country, beating out bicycling, bowling, basketball, golf, baseball, soccer, football. So it is a growing industry. There's high schools, there's college scholarships now given for bass fishing. We had the opportunity to have a young man go through our club and get a scholarship to go to college to bass fish. So it is a popular sport amongst high schools. With not a lot of things for kids to do anymore, fishing seems to be something they're passionate about and taking up. We're hoping that today we can kind of come to some kind of consensus, maybe not to just destroy it, but can we surgically do something? We're conservative fishermen. We don't want to destroy the fishery for anything, whether it be salmon, carp, bass, panfish. You know, that's what we do. But there's got to be a better alternative than just a genocide on the bass, walleye, and catfish populations. It's just the most ridiculous thing that somebody could put out there for legislation without taking the time to understand and come up with a better idea. So that's my two cents on it.
Thank you. Commissioner McIsaac.
I'll ask this question of you and the other gentlemen that are testifying that may consider the same thing, that by the law, we're obligated and shall adopt rules to liberalize bag limits. There's a variety of ways. You mentioned surgical, but do you have a recommendation that staff could analyze between now and when we have to make a final decision that's different than eliminating the bag limit that could still comply so that the commission is not breaking the law essentially by ignoring this?
Yeah, so maybe increase the bag limits. So maybe, I don't know what it is around statewide. For we are allowed 5, and we got to put them back for our tournaments alive if we have a dead kill. But I would think that we'd be able to come up with some, maybe increase it by 2 or 3 fish. That would help. And then do a slot limit. So you're not taking those brood stocks, the 5-6 pounders that are what we are looking for, and only maybe you could keep 2 or 1 over so many inches. And keep those broodstocks. I hear walleye fishermen, gentlemen I know, they keep everything, whether it's a 10-pounder or, you know, a 1-pounder. Well, those 10-pounders are what are giving us the better quality fish. It's just like the salmon. When you keep the 70-pound salmon, you're taking that broodstock. We're not going to get those genetic fish any longer. So I would think there'd be a better approach.
Well, to follow up on Commissioner McIsaac's comments, I think that the word surgical and pragmatic and maybe a few others could meld together. And I think we can actually solve some of the concerns about predation on salmon smolts, but potentially increase the opportunity for the fishing for these warm water species. I think we could do both.
It can't be
a 25-pound sledgehammer approach. I just don't think that's going to work. So,
I appreciate that.
Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, and just to echo that, I would encourage you guys in your organizations throughout the state to work with our fishery guys in the near term right now, because you know this isn't something we can put off, with ideas and suggestions, because as the other commissioner said, we're mandated to do something here, so we're willing more and we're receptive, but we need your assistance, and you know, and that's a, there's a timeliness to that issue too, so I would encourage you to do that.
And we're all open.
I'm sure the paperwork that we've been given lacks that list what's the proposal is. I would expect you could have access to that. I know the staff is a very good bunch of folks, and they don't want to be part of the problem. They want to be part of the solution. So I concur with what Commissioner Smith said. So get going on, because we only got 60 days.
We're more than happy to work with you.
There you go. Mark Wallace, please.
Mark Wallace, Mount St. Helens Bassmaster. The number three, I'd just like everybody to remember number three. And I'll come back to that. Eliminating bass and walleye is not the answer to save the salmon. There's much more of what's the cause of the issue of the salmon decline. It's such a minute number, it's not even funny. I would like to see in part of the rulemaking that all lakes, there's a lot of lakes that are listed. I'd like all lakes smaller than 4,200 acres, surface acres, to be removed from that list. Eliminating bag limits on those smaller bodies of water will decimate those lakes to never have bass in them again. Bass is not stocked by fish and game in this state, unlike other states. Lots of other states help the bass. Texas has their big bass program, lots of other states, because they see it as a viable option for everybody that wants to fish for those. Our state, we're on our own. We manage our own fish. When we do our tournaments, we have live wells. We do everything we can to put our species back, because no, we're not getting any help from anybody else to do it. So I'd love to see that all the lakes smaller than 42, at least those lakes be taken off of the list. We understand that the rule is in place. We're handcuffed. We have to do something, right? That's what the legislature wants you to do. There are options. Liberalization is a pretty gray term. There's lots of things that can be done under that blanket of liberalization. Bass fishing is very important, not only monetarily, mentally, physically. Take a warrior fishing, happens right down the road on American Lake every year. That's important to those people to get on the water and get to go fishing, and that's what they're fishing for, is bass. If bass are no longer available, they're not going to be able to do that, because they won't have us to be able to go do it, because we'll be off doing something else. And Phil touched on most everything else I was going to say, so I'm going to come back to the number three. There was three college scholarships handed out in this state based on bass fishing. Three. Salmon and whales, zero. That's all I got.
Andy.
I think this problem is going to have to be a common sense approach instead of a broad paintbrush over a vast area. I think you have to look at the bodies of water singularly. Salmon can't get into some of them. There is absolutely no way that they can get in there unless they landlock them and stock them in there in a truck. And if that's the case, then they're not indigenous to that water anyway. We stuck our finger in Mother Nature's eye many years ago, and now we want to pull it out, and we want it to come back naturally. That's really hard. When you do what you're planning on doing to this species, we're making decisions for future children that aren't even born yet. We're going to eliminate one of the things that makes America great for these kids. And I don't think we have the right.
Thank you, gentlemen. From this, forward to hearing more. Pierre Koshy, William Moffitt, and Stephen Lebsack.
Thank you, everybody. I am the president of Washington Bass Association. As my colleagues have kind of talked about, my group would just first like to take kind of a stand on one great aspect of what's been presented. We believe that nothing in the verbiage indicates there should that this enacted should result in the removal of limits on bass, walleye, and channel catfish in those lakes that end up being decided. As you mentioned, proposals, giving you guys input, my group was kind of comfortable with keeping size limits and, say, doubling bag limits on bass. Everything I've read seems to mention that the governor's Southern Resident Killer Whale Task Force has identified Chinook salmon as the primary food source for those killer whales, and yet the verbiage, as we have seen, is a little bit more ambiguous and states the intent is to reduce predation risk to salmon smolts. That's obviously not specific, and we feel this is an area where you guys, the commission, can have an influence. And after reading the research, and the intent seems to be focused on Chinook salmon, so we would like to maybe propose that you remove the lakes that are on the 146 lake list that do not have Chinook salmon present or Chinook salmon smolts running through them. And we were at the meeting in Mill Creek. There seemed to be there maybe approximately 15 lakes left, which is a great discrepancy between 146 and approximately 15. So that would obviously greatly increase our support, or just not us objecting greatly to what could happen here. Also would like to raise a couple questions that were kind of hinted to earlier. Chinook salmon smolts, obviously, as they mature, if the bass and walleye and catfish don't predate on them, will result in more adult Chinook salmon. But I didn't read a lot about the impacts on the predation of seals, sea lions, and people on those adult Chinook salmon that are what those killer whales are eating. And I would also like to ask that no matter how this is enacted, that it would be great to see some data collection over the next 5 years or so that is going to give us some feedback on how this is actually working. Because there wasn't a lot of data presented prior to the actual legislature passing what we now are discussing right here. And, you know, trends are just giving kind of a negative. Is it positive? Is it stayed the same? Because obviously the intent is to have a great impact on our fishery as a warm water fisherman. And I feel in closing that it is worth mentioning a significant amount of bass, walleye, and channel catfish were be to eliminated or greatly, significantly, their numbers decreased in those waterways. There are going to be impacts to the ecosystem that may actually negatively impact those Chinook salmon or other salmon smolts in there, because those are very, obviously, physically very small fish, and there are fish in between fish like bass, channel catfish, and walleye that will predate on those smaller fish, such as perch, rock bass, and pike minnow. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. William Moffitt?
Good morning, commissioners and directors. My name is William Moffitt. Obviously, I've been a fisherman here in the States since 1982. And I say fishermen, not bass fishermen or walleye fishermen, although I do fish for those as well. And I've seen the decline in our local salmon population. I was here when people would come from around the world to fish at Point Defiance, fish the Green River. I think this is a heavy-handed approach. I grew up fishing for pretty much every species of fish, and I regard them all. I've spent time on Point Defiance, on the clay banks, fishing with orca right there on the point. I've seen that with my own eyes, and I miss those days. And so I do want us to save the orca, so don't get me wrong on that point. But when I hear liberalization in this aspect, it's almost like eradication. And to be honest, I don't think that's the way we want to go. This is a big industry, for one, and we should probably tap into that industry to help promote salmon smolts in the future. To my understanding, we also have bodies of water that aren't known to have had king salmon, or the research wasn't there that had king salmon in those bodies of water, but we don't use those bodies of water to produce fish as well. I grew up fishing the Clover Creek, Chambers Bay area, and I know we do not allow king salmon to reproduce there naturally. However, we do use that as a planting station. Creative ways like that could probably help us to enhance our return runs. Focusing on specific species, when we're talking about predation, I don't think that's necessarily the only key element. I think we should obviously maybe liberalize the bag limits, but keep some of the brood stock that we do have in place in case some of this does not seem to work out the way we intended to. Right now, the bass and walleye fishing industry is growing in the United States. We've seen the college tours all over the United States, with the exception of here. There's some smaller tours here, but they have grown and have become multi-million dollar businesses, and it supports the local economy. This year, I was privileged to fish in the largest bass tournament ever held in Washington State, the Big Bass Tournament here on Potholes Reservoir. We've had people come from all over, and we're talking California, Arizona, just to come fish here. And there's other tournament series like the Wild West Bass Trail that want to come here, and that brings money into our local economy, which we then could use those monies to help improve our local fisheries. So I just leave you with this. I think we should probably just take a step back, really evaluate what we're planning to do, and then have some hard science behind how this actually is going to affect our fisheries. Thank you for your time.
My name is Steve Lebsack. I sit before you today not as a marine biologist, not as a fisheries specialist. I'm here in front of you today as a third-generation angler. Our family has history in this sport. My grandfather, Ray Lebsack Sr., was instrumental in creating and contributing to some of the original warm water species legislation in the state of Washington. My grandfather, as well, was instrumental in the first recovery legislation for salmon in 1997, in the Salmonoid Act. This is about a legacy for me and my family. This is about a species that we vowed that we would impose liberal limits on. We are not doing that. You saw in the proposal today from the WDFW that the term elimination is being listed as a definition of liberal. That doesn't give us numbers. That doesn't give us a slot limit. That means eradicate. When the WDFW went to the legislatures to ask about clarification on the term liberalize, we have emails from Representative Rolfe that states that upping the limits would be okay, I quote, but not if there is a cost to the ecosystem and legislature that the legislatures would not be aware of. The cost is the warm water species. That is the resource. That is the cost. If we choose to allow the WDFW to put into, instead of liberal, the term eliminate. This resource doesn't discriminate. You've heard people up here today talk about college scholarships. It is a resource that our state only has that encompasses all generations. My grandfather, my father, my children, they are fourth generation anglers and sportsmen in the state of Washington. The heavy hand of the term eliminate does not serve any of us. It muddies the water. In summary, We do not need the WDFW to impose their own agenda into House Bill 1579. House Bill 1579 clearly states liberalization of bag limits, which, going back to 2013 on the Lower Columbia River Basin, has been distinguished, as well as back in 2017 when that bag limit was changed to 10 fish, 14, one fish over 14 inches for a slot limit. House Bill 1579 clearly states liberalization of bag limits. There is no verbiage in it that states eliminate. Thank you.
Before you guys leave, I'm going to pose a question that I haven't seen in the testimony, and that is very often we use harvest as a means for population management, and that's what we're proposing with, or at least that's what how I read the statute, to help us with this problematic population of warm water species, because, you know, we need to work on salmon recovery. We need harvesters to accomplish population management with harvest. Can I ask any of you or all of you to look into your crystal ball and predict if we keep taking this blunt approach on this fishery, are we going to have harvesters around to take care of it?
If I may speak to that. So from what I've seen, and just in my history of fishing, when you do liberalize something to where there's no bag limit, there's always going to be someone that cares about the fishery, and they're going to put some fish back. But there's going to be some people that try to take advantage of that. And one of my fears is, and I mentioned this at the meeting, is that there's no bag limit, so you can, at the riverbank or waterside, you can have a bucket full of fish or a truckload full of fish. And there's no one there to manage you. You're legally allowed to take those fish away from the watershed. However, that's not... like you foraging for your family or maybe even your neighbor. That's like the neighborhood or the city. I've seen this. I've seen this happen in my local lake, Spanaway Lake, where someone would come down and literally with a 5-gallon bucket, fill it full of rock bass. And, you know, I used to take my nephews out there, and now I take them out there, and there's hardly any rock bass, right? So at some point, there's not going to be any fish there, so... I mean, there's nothing to reproduce because someone will take advantage of that. And my fear is that it's legal to take them from the bank, and even though there may be laws that govern whether or not you can commercially harvest it, I'm assuming you should have a license to do that. However, my fear is they will do a black market commercial harvesting, right? Because no one's going to be there to check them once those fish leave and they're in the community now. People will tend to use that as a means then to generate personal income. So,
based on the Warm Water Fisheries Annual Report by Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, this is an $84 million a year economic net for the state of Washington, warm water species. The eradication of this species is going to have an adverse effect on our economic value. And until we put a value on the bass, that's exactly what will happen. It will. They have proven it in hunting with Safari International, the International Safari Clubs, in protecting elephants, rhinoceroses, things. When we start putting a value on that asset, we start having people start caring about where that asset's going. To answer your question, if we... do not start controlling harvest of the bass populations, you're going to see circuits like I belong to, Northwest Bass, which is the second largest team competitive bass fishing circuit in the nation. You have in your state will no longer exist.
Well, we have one more. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Good, honest, heartfelt comments are appreciated. Okay. Please don't do that, folks. Joel Nanya is the last person on the sheet, and then we can, if the commission chooses, make our contribution in the way of comments or whatever is desired.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks, commissioners. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate the comments from my compadres back there, and thank you to Nikki. And you may have received what turned out to be kind of an 8-page research that I did into this issue when it came to our knowledge. And we're here because of the proposal that was created by the WDFW in response to the House Bill 1579. And as others have mentioned, clearly the bill does not instruct WDFW to eliminate limits. By eliminating bag limits, that means there is no bag limit. It talks about liberalization of bag limits only. My question is, and I know this isn't my chance to ask you questions, but the question is why, and I talked to Chris Donnelly and the others in Spokane at our meeting there, why did the WDFW switch the wording of the bill as it's written from liberalize to eliminate in their proposal? What's the point of that? And I'd like to get to the bottom of how they got to that point, because that is not following the letter of the law. The letter of the law says liberalize. And we asked, and they said, well, we went to the legislators to get their interpretation of what they meant by liberalize. We were provided with emails from two of the legislators, neither of which collaborated to eliminate, both of which, as Steve mentioned not having collateral damage, which can be caused by a sledgehammer approach, and neither of them collaborated utilization of the word or method to eliminate limits. That's not what the intent was, and that's not how the bill is written. And I think it's wrong to misinterpret or reinterpret something that's already in law and trying to impose whatever the agenda is for WDFW to impact this industry. So my deep interest is, why do they want to eliminate rather than liberalize? Representatives Fitzgibbon and Rolfs confirmed that they don't want to eliminate. They want to liberalize. The other issue, and I, in part, wanted to address that I doubt, and maybe you guys know, but I doubt that the representatives know that we've already liberalized limits on bass and walleye. Less than 2 years ago, we liberalized the limits on bass and walleye in additional anadromous waters. I got a feeling they don't know that. And my proposal to you is that the WDFW should write a response that says, we've already done this. We're already in compliance with House Bill 1579. Take credit for it. We were proactive. And even though potentially that doesn't really have an impact on salmon, I believe we're already in compliance. In closing, I would ask you, as you're considering what our concerns are, to please consider, and I looked up the mission of the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, and that mission is to conserve fish and wildlife and provide sustainable recreational and commercial opportunities. We want to turn the table 180 degrees and see a commitment from the WDFW to grow this sport. We're holding it back. Let's grow it and take advantage of the economic opportunity that it represents. And I really thank you guys for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate all the comments from the public. Any comments from the front table?
Okay.
Commissioner, okay. All three of you. Oh, Commissioner Graybill, I'm glad you woke up. We'll let you go first.
Sorry, Hal, this is not your time.
Go ahead, David.
Thank you. Just a brief comment. This is in regard to this list of waters that are to be included. And just as an example, in my region, there are two lakes listed to be included. One is Lake Wenatchee, where there are no populations of bass, walleye, or catfish. And the other is Lake Assiniboine, which straddles the border of Canada. But just as an example, in my region, there's two lakes listed, and only one of them even has a population of the species that we're talking about today. So we need to make real close examination of this list as part of the process as we move forward with this.
Okay. Thank you, David. I see Craig Burley's head is going up and down, so that's a good sign.
And he's smiling.
I think, and I would just add to what David said, even I look around on that list in the area that I live, I believe there's a whole bunch of them that don't belong on there. But we'll talk about that, I suspect. Commissioner McIsaac, Anderson, Smith, and then we'll go down to the right. Oh, they're all going to. Good.
Not me.
Well, you will.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll be very brief here. I would support asking the staff to come up with some additional alternatives in terms of liberalizing things for minor bag limit changes or to include a slot limit, a variety of options, a few options for us to consider in December, and that when we meet in December that we have that agenda item open to public comment so that the public can hear what the staff's analysis of those are. Also, we heard in testimony some very good comments about evaluation. How do you know if you're doing anything significant? And so I'd support having the staff take a look at a couple of lakes somewhere where there's a couple of different approaches, one of them being the strongest approach, maybe, and that we have an evaluation of what that really does. And I'd ask the folks here from the fishing industry to try to work with the staff as to what lakes might be involved in an evaluation like that, and encourage Commissioner Smith's perspective that they work with the staff on what these alternatives are that we would have analyzed and look at in December.
Thank you. Commissioner Anderson.
I would, it was a working yesterday. I would echo what Commissioner McIsaac has just said. I would maybe add to it with regard to the monitoring evaluation component, ask for engagement as can be done by the sports fishing community in terms of the monitoring and evaluation component. I would think some kind of representative sample that where we could actually get a handle on whether this does any good or not, and then go forward with iterations or modifications if what we find. So
that's it. Mr. Smith.
Thank you. In all of this, the department and the commission, we're not the enemy. I think this is a good example of what just you saw transpire of how the system should work. We work with a lot of issues, you know, across the board. We need public input before these issues are codified or put forward. We learn from what you do. We're not the bad guys here. We are partners. And a lot of all of these issues that we deal with, whether they're four-legged or winged or clawed, we have to deal with this as partners. And part of that partnership comes with the responsibility. I was very moved by the testimony today. You guys did a good job, all of you across the board. Put that into, condense that into something that you can work closely with the department on. You know, get that down because they're taking notes. We're taking notes, but put your thoughts down so we have a document that we can go forward with in the next couple months that we can work together as partners. We hear you and we want to do this, but, you know, we're here to work with you, not against you, and we did hear you. Thank you.
Well, it's really hard to follow those three gentlemen and the statements they made. They're pretty significant and very meaningful. I just have a couple things. One is, I think, I hate to use the word knee-jerk, so I'm not going to use it. I just think maybe it's potentially an overreaction to an issue that was laid upon our back, and we got to learn from that and move forward. I want to talk a little bit about the economics. I was in the marine industry for 42 years, and I just sold my business back in 2019. And I was up in a little tiny town up north, and the last 12 or 14 years I was in business, I sold about $10 million a year worth of stuff. But you can do the math on the sales tax, and I sold boats. I didn't sell many bass boats, but I sold every other kind of boat. And I can tell you, there is a significant economic downside to when regulations are imposed without adequate input and review. And I won't go into all the details. Way back before I was on the commission, there would be closures and adjustments that you could measure at the cash register, and they weren't going the wrong right direction. And Commissioner Thorburn asked questions about what the future looks like. Well, when people quit fishing, they don't have a need to buy a boat or replace an engine or buy more tackle. They'll just turn their fishing rods into golf clubs, and we can't afford that in this industry, and we can't afford it in this department primarily, because I'll tell you, the contribution of revenue for licenses in this state help pay the bills, keep the lights on here, and all the other programs we have, hatcheries and quality staff and so on. But the other thing that's a huge contributor from the marine industry and the tackle industry is sales tax revenue. Sales tax revenue and excise tax on the sales of trailers. Big amounts of money go into the state's coffers. We got to be respectful of that and make good decisions. So, thank you.
Commissioner McIsaac basically expressed the direction that I support. Focus a little bit on the evaluation. I do endorse that. I think if we're making this kind of change, that we really need to try to see if it's having the impact that we are seeking. And in that light, when we do our rules in three-year packages, and we'll have warm water, the fisheries coming around. If the evaluation shows that the approach that we've taken is, not as effective or not needed, I may want to take a look at, especially the slot limit issue in our three-year review. So just to put that on the table as well, I'm mostly talking about what happens with the current proposals and encourage staff to bring us some options.
Commissioner Lindville.
I was wondering if you'd entertain a little quick survey just in the thinking of some possible gives. I'm wondering from all of you, if you'll raise your hand, are you feeling like it's the lakes that are a bigger concern on this versus the river bodies that we know have an anadromous fish in that? So raise your hand if you're more concerned about the lakes. Okay, thank you for that. That helps.
Commissioner Lindwell, if I could add one thing. These gentlemen are all from the west side. They're all from...
No.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for doing it. I think you're probably going to get a different response regionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. I just, that actually gave me the answer.
What you needed?
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you for that.
We set precedent. It's going to go back and be used as leverage against us in the future. I would say we're against any river or lake system on this list.
Okay. Thank you for that.
End of this. Thank you all very much for your participation. Look forward to hearing more in the future.